From WKER Studios at Michigan State University, welcome back to the second half hour of Current State. I'm WKER Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick, catching you up on what's happening around the Capital Region and the Great Lakes. This is the opening weekend for MSU men's basketball, and the team is bound to make headlines for what they're wearing as well as how they're playing. Joining us now to explain is current sports host Al Martin. Hello.
Reg, how you doing, man?
I'm great. So we're talking about new t-shirts that the Spartans are kind of sporting starting last week.
Yeah, there was a press conference that was held on Wednesday of this week, actually, and you know, we thought it was just going to be on signing day because Michigan State did sign five new players to its 2018 recruiting class, but after Izzo goes through that recruiting class, he begins to take out his glasses and read a statement that he has drawn up concerning how his team wanted to shed light on injustices, social injustices here in America.
We felt that there were too many people talking and not enough people listening. Everybody has their own opinion on things. Everybody talks about things and not a lot gets done. As a team, we realized that we have a platform. This isn't for show. This isn't make anybody feel good. It's not then make anybody feel bad. It's to figure out that we need to capture a moment and get people to converse to create a movement.
And what the team will be doing, Reg, is wearing t-shirts that speak to just that. On the front, it will say, "We talk, we listen." On the back of those t-shirts, it will say, "It's not about me. It's about us," which is a direct quote from when Miles Bridges held his press conference in front of the Spartan statue on campus to announce that he will be returning for his sophomore year. And a few things that really stood out to me about the press conference, Reg, is when Tom Izzo said that doing nothing doesn't help. He felt like staying silent was wrong. And he actually is the one that called the meeting. He's the one that said, "Hey, guys, I want to meet and talk about your different experiences being a young person here in America, and I want to get your thoughts on what we've seen, you know, when it comes to the different dynamics of injustice here in America." Him, along with his coaching staff and the players, sat down and would have these different conversations.
You know, you talked to some of the players about this. What did they have to say about these t-shirts and this message?
They want to send out a message of unity, and they want to get people to open up and talk about why are we having the kind of problems that we are having when it comes to social injustices here in America. Here's sophomore point guard Reg Cassius Winston on the kind of message they want to send by wearing these t-shirts.
If we could do that as a team, then just starting that conversation with throughout the fans or throughout anybody could, you know, people could find that they all have something in common. They all have something they can work towards together. And, you know, that's the whole goal of these shirts.
So as he just indicated, they want this to be more than just a saying on a t-shirt. They actually want this to be more of a dialogue out in the public.
Yeah, they do. And I'm curious to see what the response is going to be because I really don't know right now if they plan on wearing these t-shirts throughout the year. We do know, of course, that they're going to wear them this week, you know, when it comes to the opening game against North Florida. But as far as this being a running thing throughout the season, we'll have to wait and see. I'm curious to see what the response is. But, you know, I think it's, you know, again, we talked about how we've seen different protests happen over the years in the NBA. In the NFL, really haven't seen anything collegiately. So I'm curious to just get the thoughts of a student body like Michigan State and to get their response to these t-shirts being worn. But I think it's very admirable. And I think it speaks to Tom Izzo's moral compass to want to do something like this, because we can't ignore where we are as a nation right now in 2017 and Izzo. And again, he hit on this as well, Reg, you know, he knows the importance of using his platform. He's a big name. Michigan State men's basketball is a big brand. It's a big program. I mean, this program is right now ranked number two in the nation, for goodness sake. They all understand that having this platform is a privilege, and doing something greater than the game is really important to them. And I think that's the kind of message that Izzo and his entire program is sending.
We talk, we listen, look for that on the t-shirts of the MSU men's basketball team this fall. Thank you, Al, for joining me.
Anytime, Race, thank you.
And you can hear Al weekdays at 1 p.m. on FM 94.5 and AM 870 WKAR. You're listening to Current State here on WKAR. This Saturday is Veterans Day, a time when we honor those who put their lives on the line for America. A new book about the Vietnam War focuses on the journey of one Midwestern man. WKAR's Peter Wharf and Traverse City, Michigan author Doug Stanton bring us a story of the horrors of war and its aftermath through one citizen soldier.
A recon soldier is a seeker of violence in a violent world, operating behind enemy lines, ambushing and attacking, shooting and surviving. Men in recon were to be feared and held in awe. The young men in recon were hunters who might become the hunted at the snap of a twig.
That's Doug Stanton, the author of the new book, The Odyssey of Echo Company, the 1968 Tet Offensive and the Epic Battle to Survive the Vietnam War. In it, he tells that story and the personal story of Stan Parker, from Gary, Indiana. And when you first talked to him about writing about his story, he hesitated like many veterans. And then when you came back to him, he said, "I've been waiting for you." What did you feel when he said that?
Well, I thought it's about time. I mean, since the book has come out, I've realized that Vietnam is the secret that a whole generations of America, and in fact, our country itself, is holding tight to its chest. And the costs of this, I think, are tragic. So when Stan Parker finally and I engaged in a conversation about what had happened to him in Vietnam, it really was the beginning of a long journey for Stan and his platoon mates and for me. You know, the question is, you know, to anyone, were you in Vietnam and what happened there? And it's about time we put a period on the end of that sentence and replace the question mark. It's a searing story. It's an emotional story. Ultimately, it's a story about people. So you don't have to really know much about Vietnam to know Stan Parker and what he went through, because his journey is, I think, universal for a lot of families who've had people in combat, or who've experienced trauma, to be honest.
I was just so moved by the way you contrast unimaginable horror and violence with humanity, love and tenderness. Scenes like those talking about his beloved mother, his high school sweetheart, a nurse in the hospital who cares for him, who mends and washes a sweater that's been almost shot off his body after that experience at Trung Ho. Just incredibly moving stories.
Well, I think that ultimately this is a book about people, Peter. I think I really wanted to separate the war from the soldier, and really, as a reporter and a writer, I sat and listened. Also, the irony is that the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., otherwise known as the Wall, is the most visited memorial in Washington, D.C., yet it's the least talked about war that we have. We can kind of look at the war, but we can't talk about the war. And that's what I'm trying to do in this book, that you slide it across the kitchen table to someone and say, you know, weren't you there? And perhaps it creates a conversation that is important.
Doug Stanton's the author of the New York Times bestsellers Horse Soldiers and In Harm's Way, and the new book, The Odyssey of Echo Company, the 1968 Tet Offensive, and the epic battle to survive the Vietnam War. Doug, thanks very much.
Thank you.
More than 2.5 million Americans, the same population as present-day Chicago, served in the Vietnam War. One of the legacies of the war, thousands of children left in orphanages in Vietnam. Many were the product of relationships between American military men and Vietnamese women. On a very personal note, I am one of those children. I was born 130 miles south of Saigon, now known as Ho Chi Minh City. I came to the United States when I was only a few months old and raised by my adoptive parents in Colorado. Many Vietnamese adoptees have tried to search for their biological parents. Recently, I talked with two women on that journey and learned one has had partial success thanks to technology. Tammy Moore of Flint was only 3 months old when she made the 8,000-mile journey from Vietnam to Detroit.
I came over April 26, 1975, and that was one of the last planes.
Moore was one of 3,000 children brought to America during Operation Babylift in 1975, reported in this Defense Department video.
One of the final airlift operations in Southeast Asia was the evacuation of thousands of refugees just prior to the fall of the South Vietnamese government. Included among the refugees were hundreds of orphans who were...
Moore arrived in Detroit with little more than the clothes she was wearing.
The time that Operation Babylift happened, when the orphanages were going so fast to get the babies out, a lot of the paperwork was either destroyed or put on fire.
Moore's adopted family raised her in Troy. Now a professional with her own husband and children, Moore has hit dead ends while trying to find her birth parents.
The adoption agency that I went through is no longer, so a lot of their records are not available.
She is not alone. Thousands of orphans left Vietnam in the 1970s with little, if any, paperwork. Most were biracial babies of American servicemen, like Tony Harrison, who talked with me via Skype.
As records say that I was born in 1972, not quite sure what month. My father would have been Black American, and my mother was a Vietnamese.
You may have noticed Harrison's British accent. Well, in addition to Americans, families in the UK, Germany, Australia, and Canada also adopted Vietnamese orphans.
I'm Vietnamese, born in the Vietnam War, but however, I look very black. the identity crisis in my life has always been a problem.
Discover the story only your DNA can tell. Order your
Harrison confirmed her ethnicity with a DNA test, but then came a pleasant surprise.
And after contacting some of the family, my distant cousins I found, I mean, I think the first word one of my cousins said was, "Welcome home. You found your family."
Her curiosity about her family only grew from there. She tried more tests over the course of several years and then found her biological father.
You're looking for a man in the whole of the United States. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. I never thought that I would ever speak to my father in this lifetime.
Harrison located her father in North Carolina. But before meeting him, she had to prepare herself to hear the answer of a question that's haunted her entire life.
Being a product of war, there was three reasons why I was here. It would have been prostitution, rape, or love. I have always had that on my mind as a, you know, growing up. Which one am I?
On September 27th, she used Skype to see and hear her father for the first time.
I said, "Oh my God, Dad, I really can't believe I'm talking to my father." And he said, "I can't believe I'm talking to my daughter." And it was so lovely.
Harrison learned her father now lives in a nursing home after being paralyzed in a car accident. She also learned she had five half-siblings born before he served in Vietnam. Then came the answer to a lifelong question.
He lived with my mother for a year and a half, and that he loved my mother very much. So to hear his voice to say those words took the most amazing weight off my shoulders, and it made me a free person. He knew that I was expected, and she was carrying me. However, he got orders to leave. He was a drill sergeant in Saigon.
Filled with new answers and new hope, Harrison will fly from the UK to North Carolina this month to meet her father and extended family face to face. All the while, she continues to look for her biological mother, but she holds no malice for being orphaned by her.
The story is not black and white, why our mothers give us up. I'm a great believer that a lot of the mothers, our biological mothers, were very scared. They were very young, and they had to give us up under either pressure from their own families.
Back here in Michigan, Tammy Moore has also taken a DNA test.
It did say I was all Asian. It said I was like a little bit of Northern Asian and Southern and the majority of Southern Asian.
Moore is also active in groups to learn about Vietnamese culture.
My history and my life is a puzzle. And if I can find out little pieces, great. If not, then I guess that's just how life is supposed to be.
One day, Moore hopes to make the 8,000-mile trip back to Vietnam.
Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know,
you can view recent baby pictures of both Tammy Moore and Tony Harrison on our website, WKAR.org. There are also videos from the 1975 Operation Baby Lift. And if you're wondering if I have tried to search for my biological parents, my fate is similar to Tammy's. I've tried, but so far, little success.
So you can see, oh, what's going on?
Thanks for staying with us here on Current State on WKAR. Here's a question for you Great Lakes lovers. Which is the clearest lake? You may have guessed Lake Superior. Well, that was true for a long time, but a recent study found that Lakes Michigan and Huron are now the clearest, and their rise is not really good news. Dan Crocker of Minnesota Public Radio explains.
I'm here at Brighton Beach outside Duluth, and I can assure you, Lake Superior is still really clear. I'm looking down into about 6 feet of water, and I can easily see the smooth rocks at the bottom. So how did it drop in the rankings? Because Lakes Michigan and Huron are now way clearer than they used to be.
And not only do they show big changes, but they also kind of passed Lake Superior in terms of water clarity.
Gary Fonensteel is a senior research scientist at Michigan Tech University and co-author of the study in the Journal of Great Lakes Research.
And this was really profound because if anybody's been in the Great Lakes for years, you recognize that Lake Superior is kind of always held as the clearest, most pristine lake of all the five Great Lakes.
For the study, scientists analyzed satellite images captured between 1998 and 2012. Over that period, the depth that light could penetrate into the water increased by about 20% in Lakes Michigan and Huron. So what's going on? Fonensteel says it's partly due to less runoff of phosphorus, which is common in farm fertilizer. But the dominant factor, he says, is the explosion of invasive zebra and quagga mussels in the lakes in the past 20 years or so. He says some of the world's highest concentrations of quagga mussels are found in Lake Michigan.
So in a somewhat figurative sense, you could almost walk on a bed of mussels from one side of Lake Michigan to the other.
And all those mussels filter a lot of water.
Like, it's estimated in Lake Michigan right now, the mussels can filter the entire volume of water in 6 days.
The mussels eat the plankton in the water. Those plankton are the dominant light absorbers. So remove plankton and the water gets a lot clearer. That's good, right? After all, if you've been to the eastern shore of Lake Michigan, you know it's gorgeous. The water is this aqua blue color and you can see down 30, 40 feet.
Bingo. And I feel the same way when I'm on my sailboat in Lake Michigan. It reminds me now of the Caribbean.
This is Robert Schuckman, co-director of the Michigan Tech Research Institute and another co-author of the study. He says you have to think about the ramifications of that water clarity. The plankton that the mussels filter also are the base of the food chain. If they're gone, the rest of the chain risks starvation.
So again, it's very disconcerting because if you take it to the limit, the Great Lakes may be totally clear and you're kayaking and you're seeing the bottom, but they may end up being literally ecological deserts.
The clearer water also has led to a surge in a dangerous algae. Cladophora is a hotspot for the growth of a harmful bacteria that in turn produces a botulism toxin, and that has killed large numbers of fish and birds, including migrating loons. But there may be a bit of good news, says Fonensteel. The number of invasive mussels may have peaked in Lake Michigan, and he hopes the improved water clarity in Lakes Michigan and Huron sparks a new sense of pride in stewardship. Back at Brighton Beach outside Duluth, 70-year-old Rob Hall knows firsthand just how clear Lake Superior is. The retired firefighter is a scuba diver who's done about 500 dives in the big lake.
I drink it, they swim in it, they eat the fish that come out of it.
So do you feel a loss of pride that Lake Superior is not the clearest of the lakes anymore?
No, still the best. Call it Superior for a reason. Period.
Even if it's no longer the clearest of the Great Lakes. For Great Lakes Today, I'm Dan Crocker in Duluth.
So much has happened since I last saw you. I lost my hammer, like yesterday, so that's still pretty fresh.
Here on Current State, you're listening to the trailer from Thor Ragnarok, the top movie in America last weekend. And going to the movie theaters is something millions of us do every week, but some experience it in much different ways than you and I. WKAR's Jamie Paisley introduces us to a man who challenges the way we experienced movies.
Tommy Edison likes going to the movies, and like many people, he has some pet peeves about modern theatergoers.
Oh, you know, when they talk and they... I don't like when people talk during a film because it takes me out of the experience. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get into the story and just be with it. And then somebody's going, yeah. And it's like, oh, please don't do that.
Now, extra talking takes Tommy a bit more out of the experience than others because he has been visually impaired since birth. Still, he loves to review movies on his YouTube page, The Blind Film Critic.
So for Suicide Squad, I'm going to give this one 2 out of 4 eyes open. This is more like Homicide Squad. I mean, look what they did to the story.
While an increasing number of movie chains have something called Descriptive Video Services, or DVS, that help people experience films like The Lion King without having the visuals, here's a sample of that, by the way.
Rafiki breaks one open. The wise old baboon dips his thumb in its juice and draws a line on Simba's forehead.
But Tommy Edison, the blind film critic, mostly avoids this DVS.
For me, I think if a movie is really good, I think if it's acted well, if it's written well, it's performed well, you don't need Descriptive Video. You really don't. I mean, like Goodfellas, for example, is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I really believe that if you were to just listen to it and not watch it, you wouldn't miss much. You wouldn't miss much at all.
Another fairly recent example of that was Joe Carnahan's The Gray, a wilderness survival film starring Liam Neeson.
It was so immersive. I felt like I was out in the rain. Like I was literally checking my head to see if it was, I was getting right, because it sounded so real, and it was so, a lot of times in movies, they don't use all the surround sound, they only use that for the trailers. You know what I mean? When you get right into the story, everything's basically coming from the front of the theater, and they hardly even pan it, you know? But this was remarkable, and I just loved it, because it was, you know, it was audio design. It was great.
Getting people to think about how others might experience something as commonplace as a movie, like The Gray, is exactly what brings Tommy Edison, the blind film critic, out of the theater and to Michigan State University.
I was invited to come and speak for World Usability Day by a guy called Graham Pierce. And I got to talk about my life and accessibility on the web and how it works for me and how it doesn't work for me and some what the learning curve was and, you know, how it all happened. And also talking about my life and my stories and how I was able to do the things in my life that I've been able to do.
One big surprise happened in 2016 after Tommy's YouTube videos as a movie critic and once describing his experiences as a blind man helped make a movie, but without his knowledge.
There was a film that came out in August of 2016. It's called Don't Breathe. It's directed by a guy named Fetty Alvarez. And Fetty Alvarez contacted me on Twitter to say, hey man, I want to thank you for your videos. They really helped me to create this character for my film. And I went, what? And he goes, oh yeah, yeah. Would you like to come to a press junket and come and see the film and meet everybody? And I was like, yeah, of course. So I got to meet everybody from this film, Don't Breathe. Now, if you're not familiar with it, it sort of takes place in Detroit. And it's about this group of kids who have this idea to go rob a blind guy. You know, it's not a horror movie per se. It's much more suspenseful than it is. That there's not much gore in it at all. And it was really cool of him to sort of big me up for, you know, using the videos to help him write his character.
Tommy Edison's videos, including his Don't Breathe interview, the movie that he unknowingly helped out with, can be found at youtube.com/blindfilmcritic, as well as his other videos about visual impairment at the Tommy Edison Experience. For WKAR, I'm Jamie Paisley.
And that's it for this weekend's Current State. WKAR station manager is Peter Worf. Susie Elkins is Director of Broadcasting and General Manager of WKAR Public Media. And I'm Reginald Hardwick, WKAR Digital News Director. We're going to leave you with something special. WKAR reporter Kevin Lavery, who also happens to be a military veteran, attended WKAR's interfaith service at the Michigan Vietnam Monument on November 2nd. He produced this montage of moments from the service for all of us to listen to as we honor the men and women who served in the United States Armed Forces.
Let us pause in silence in the midst of clamor and confusion, hurries and worries, fear and frustration. Together we say, we wait upon you, O God, to feel your presence, to know your purpose, to experience your power.
For everything there is a season, a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal.
We humbly honor our dear comrades noted on the Vietnam Memorial behind me, and know well that these men and women now passed are more than just names. They were real people with families, each one. Beloved, words do not exist to pay due reverence to the fallen. Their lives, interwoven melodies, comprise a symphony of sovereign service that musicians cannot faithfully render. Therefore, may we simply reflect with solemn gratitude, pray for their beloved, and give praise to our divine Creator for such servants of freedom.
Healing this world together, studying war no more.
We are thankful for those who gave their tomorrows so that we could have our todays. Go in peace.